my great-grandmother's. My mom's mom's mom. Died when I was about 3 months old. Before she died, she slipped a note into my crib. I guess it was intended to be a gift of sorts. The words of the note were simple, handwritten in pencil. It gave clear instructions for how to bring someone back from the dead. People often ask me why I haven't used this spell. And the reason is that although the instructions are simple, their execution is not. In addition to the one sentence incantation that is to be recited, the spell also requires the ceremonial burning of 16 turkey feathers. Now, turkey feathers are easy to come by. Over the years, I've collected thousands of them. Problem is that for the spell to work, all 16 feathers have to be collected on the same day. They all have to come from different turkeys, live ones, and they all have to be exactly the same length. So in other words, it's impossible. Being close, even very close, is not good enough. During the years when I still thought I might be able to execute the spell someday, I used to make lists of all the people I'd bring back to life. Slim Harpo, Blind Gary Davis, Hound Dog Taylor, Jimmy Reed. It went on and on like that for years, till I finally realized it was a waste of time. A while back, I designed an image and had it printed on t-shirts and stickers. It's a take on Shepard Fairey's Andre the Giant design, but instead of Andre the Giant's face, I used Henry David Thoreau's face. I also changed the directive from obey to disobey. It's an obvious nod to Thoreau's essay, Civil Disobedience, and was a meager attempt on my part to make a few bucks. In a roundabout way, it also ended up leading to my show at Walden 3. Somehow or other, Thoreau found my design. He was trolling the internet one day, probably Googling himself, and he came across my website. I should probably back up for a second. It's not Thoreau, but the dude Thoreau's been reincarnated into, or that's what he said in the email he sent me. He goes by the name Jacques Henri now, and he's been working as an actuary for the U.S. Forest Service for almost 20 years. For the sake of this story, though, I'll hereafter refer to him as Thoreau. He's obviously been laying really low. Nobody else even knew he was who he is till he told me. He makes Salinger and Pynchon look like the Hilton sisters, who they tell me have actually been laying pretty low themselves lately. Anyway, he hasn't been tooting his own horn. Surprising, I know. So my design, with his former face, caught his eye, and he scrolled through the rest of my website and checked out my artwork. I guess he got pretty excited about it, because he sent me an email to ask me how much it was setting back to commission a new sculpture. I told him I was flattered as hell by his inquiry, but I didn't really have much use for that sort of thing anymore, what with art being such a total fucking dead end and all. We emailed back and forth for a couple weeks, sending each other links to things we thought the other should see. I mostly just sent him old humble pie videos, but to be honest with you, it didn't take me long to get bored with what he was sending me. Not to be rude, but can I just say that that dude is still really, really into nature, especially trees. I was like, God damn, man, how many fucking tree pictures are you going to send me? First couple weeks, I looked at all of them, but only out of respect. I mean, I like trees as much as anybody, at least I used to, but getting through all those pictures was a chore. It made the tree of life seem like a 3-hour car chase. I just hit delete now. It wasn't all humble pie videos and tree pictures, though. We wrote notes to each other, too. He opened up to me in one of his notes, told me that despite the fact that he was living in a massive log cabin on the Hudson, it just didn't have the joie that the old Walden place had had. He knew it never would. I told him I understood, because I did. Scale matters, and, you know, bigger is not always better. Later, as I was sitting around thinking about his ennui, an idea struck me. And that's when I made a commitment to myself to get Thoreau back to the pond and set up in a brand new, insanely cool house. Now everyone, except the most backward of hayseeds, is probably aware of this puzzling trend from a few years ago, during the period when architects got the wild hair up their asses to start posing as artists. In no time, they were actually considered to be artists. They were given slots in prestigious museum shows, and perhaps most despicably, they began scooping up all the public art projects simply because they had engineering in their fucking backgrounds. I mean, don't get me wrong, I always say live and let live, and I begrudge no deserving party their successes. But it's a little crazy-making when an institution as sprawling and formless as the art world decides, for no discernible reason, to change one of the few rules it has. Namely, that architects need to stay down in their station where they belong. Case in point, when people talk about the Sistine Chapel, they're never talking about the building. When people do talk about buildings, they're usually the kind that surround virtually unusable space, like the downtown Seattle Public Library. Case closed. If I can get back on track here, the idea I got was to design Thoreau's new house myself. If an architect can be an artist, then I can for damn sure be an architect. I've got a pretty firm grip on the Pythagorean theorem. What more could I need? Most of you probably know who Tom Kundig is. He's about as hot as an architect can be right now, and for the most part, I think his houses are pretty cool. I figured I'd just rip off a bunch of his standard stuff, use a lot of steel and concrete, and have some kind of crazy-ass hydraulic flip-top thingamajig for the roof. I also wanted to incorporate most of Corbusier's 5 points, which I think were best exemplified in his Villa Savoy. Most importantly, to me, this would mean putting the cabin up on stilts, which in this case seemed especially apropos, given that Thoreau wrote that line about building your castle up in the sky where it belongs, but to then be sure to put a foundation under it, which in this case would be the stilts. Ultimately, I think the real linchpin of the whole design had nothing at all to do with the design, but the location. Instead of putting the cabin on the shore of the pond, I decided it should be in the pond, but up on the aforementioned stilts, so that Thoreau's new cabin would be above the pond. I arrived in Concord on New Year's Day, 2013. Man, those Concord bureaucrats are some hard nuts. I went to get my building permit and got nothing but a run around. After about 2 minutes of the community standard spiel, it all began to sound like nothing so much as a choking sleep apneaic. You can't build a house out of steel, he droned on. Not in Concord. I decided to tell him that Kundig had designed it so we could get things underway. But he had no idea who Kundig was. He's the hottest architect in America right now, I said. No, fuck that. He's the hottest architect in the Northern Hemisphere right now. And if left alone, he'll take the world title soon. Just because you don't believe me don't mean it ain't true. Then he shot one of those smug Yankee smirks at me. Look, I said, I'm going out to my truck. When I come back, I'm going to prove it. I had a whole floorboard full of obscure architecture magazines, each of them featuring Kundig. On one cover, he was standing there, looking all cool, with a thumb hooked in a pocket, the lord of his own line of hardware. When I came back in, I dropped the magazines on the bureaucrat's desk, but he wasn't impressed. He looked at me like I'd just dropped a couple armloads of wet beaver pelts on his desk. I didn't have any more time to waste, so I gathered up my magazines and left. I needed to get some good cheap workers, so I went straight to the Home Depot, corralled about 8 or 10 Canadian immigrants into the back of my fifth wheel, and we headed out to the pond. Being shrewd business people, as Canucks are wont to be, they insisted on getting paid before they did any work. So after some negotiating, we settled on a deal, and I paid each one of them in full. They all got a fresh loaf of seedy kosher rye, a Black Forest handball, and a little jar of that spicy Chinese mustard. They seemed damn happy to get it, too. So since reclaimed and repurposed is all the rage now, I decided we should rip up some train tracks and cross ties that run along the west side of the pond, and that's what we built the house with. I knew Thoreau would get a kick out of that because he always hated trains. So we got what we needed and no more, and the Canadians got the house put up over the course of one long night. You know, it seems that when it comes to environmental catastrophes, it's pretty much just a matter of time, no matter what kind of scenario you want to dream up. The most fucked up thing you can think of is eventually going to happen. So as bad luck would have it, the first train to come up the track the next day was hauling about a mile's worth of the gnarliest chemicals you could imagine. Naturally, the train derailed and all the cars exploded, and the pond was soon flooded with thick liquid cancer. Thoreau couldn't care less, though. He's got a cool new house now, and he's going to enjoy it as long as he can. As for the pain and misery that'll accompany his imminent cancer, he's not worried about that either. He says he's got a plan for when it gets really bad. It's .45 caliber hollow point. It's got his brain written all over it.